Another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
You're listening to Free With This Month's Issue. As always, please support the bands and artists featured in each episode by buying their records and going to their gigs. Each episode we'll be adding all available tracks to our ongoing Spotify playlist, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also find our other episodes and podcasts there. If you want to agree with us, or more likely argue with us, or even appear in a future episode, you can find us on Twitter at This Month's Issue and Facebook at Free With This Month's Issue. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, then let people know. Like, subscribe, review it on iTunes, tattoo it on your forehead, etc. Right, let's get on with it then.
Welcome to Free With This Month's Issue, a podcast where we talk about the free magazine CDs you used to get. Do you still get them, Colin?
You do.
On
some magazines, such as Mojo, which is the one that I think we're doing today.
Ah, because Mojo is like a middle-aged music fans magazine, which means that they still have CD players, right?
Yes, this is right.
I'm talking from a position of being basically a middle-aged man,
yeah.
So not judging.
I thought that was a reference to our guest today.
Well, because Tracy is indeed a middle-aged man, yes. It is our erstwhile co-host from We Dig Music, Tracy.
Hello.
Hello.
Despite what she may sound like, she is in fact a middle-aged man.
I do own a CD player still.
See?
And me. It's right there. Because we're recording at my house today on YouTube.
Yeah.
We're not using it though, because I haven't got a remote for it.
Well.
And I'd have to sit right next to it. Tracy.
Hello.
What CD have you brought for us?
I have bought a CD that came with Mojo, as Ian alluded to. It was given away in 2012 and it's called There Is a Light That Never Goes Out.
What a surprise.
Is it full of Smith's covers?
It's full of no Smith's covers.
No Smith's covers at all.
The cover of it is. Alluding to the Hatful of Hollow cover.
Right. Yeah, the Smiths are on the cover of the magazine, but it's Indie Classics 1982 to 1987.
So they couldn't even be asked to get Smiths covers and collate them together then? Is that what we're saying? Is this some lazy-ass bullshit? Don't tell me what's on there.
I'm not telling you what's on there. I'm going to tell you what the thinking behind the CD was. It's 82 to 87 is when the Smiths were.
Yeah, yeah.
Were active. Well... Yeah. And this is the other bands that were around during that time.
Oh.
Kind of the contemporaries.
Yeah. But the lesser known.
Mostly.
None of them achieved the same commercial success as the Smiths did.
I would say there's one that's not far off. But anyway,
yes.
We'll get to that in a bit.
You're right.
Yeah, we will.
So, Mojo, is it... Is it a magazine that you buy regularly? What's your kind of your music magazine habit?
I was a Melody Maker subscriber back in the late 80s and through into sort of the mid 90s. But I didn't really buy the other music magazines much. They're bloody expensive.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. But occasionally I used to browse the magazine racks at our local co-op, which is where I would have picked this one up.
We're getting quite a few references to, yeah, you just used to go and read them in a shop in these episodes as they're going along.
But this one would have leapt out at me with the Hatful of Hollow cover.
Wouldn't have in the late 80s though, because it was out in, this is the most recent one that we've done.
Yeah, it was in 2012, but you know, it would have leapt out at me from the shelf.
I'm guessing that in 2012 you had more money than when you were lurking around in shops. But like, you could just be like, I'm going to buy that, rather than, do I want to spend my last 46 pence on this? Or shall I get a packet of crisps so I don't starve?
Is Mojo one... Would you have just bought this for the CD, or do you get it regularly, or...?
I would have probably only bought it for the CD, actually. When it came to Music Mags, I'm more likely to pick up Uncut than Mojo.
See, Uncut is... this is the first time we've done a Mojo magazine CD. We've done Uncut, I believe, twice now.
Yeah.
Without mentioning that it sounds like it's a magazine for people who like uncircumcised penises.
Fairly sure that you did mention that the first time it was on there in Tom's episode.
Good, that's okay then. I'm not sure if it made the edit though, did it?
I think it did because I re-listened to it the other week.
Ah.
But yeah, Mojo, it's a similar kind of nostalgic... It's a dad rock magazine, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Because I don't buy Mojo.
My dad gets it
and I nick his copies. But I've always preferred Mojo to Uncut. I think overall it has a better sort of quality of journalism in there. And
okay.
Sort of better articles, better interviews. Even though, it like Uncut, it tends to be recycling the same maybe 10 bands all of the fucking time.
Yeah.
But this particular issue, so as we said, it was October.
You're holding it up and there's a Mark Knopfler advertisement on the back.
On the back, yeah. It's got the Sex Pistols inside. That's slightly edgier.
Yeah, yeah.
But Mark Knopfler is going to kind of...
In 2012.
It is going to be dad rock, you know, alarms going off, isn't it? The cover, we've got the Smiths. You've got Johnny Marr and Morrissey, obviously, being interviewed. Kraftwerk, the Mod Olympics, so that can fuck off. Bob Dylan. There are a couple of newer bands on there. There's Tune Yards and the XX. There's Dinosaur Jr. And very spectacularly, Vangelis Speaks.
Wow. I always thought that was a hard G. I thought it was Vangelis.
Is it Vangelis? It might be. Somebody else I've only ever read the name of. So, October 2012, I looked up the music news that was happening in the world, as we do each episode, and in October 2012... fuck all happened.
This is often the case.
No, we've had at least something in every single one. I found no music news whatsoever for October 2012.
Wow.
Even though it was only, 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
But a few days before, so the end of September, Billy Joe Armstrong had his massive hissy fit on stage at the iHeart Radio
Festival.
Oh, God,
that was the most ridiculous.
And then subsequently booked into rehab the next day. Albums released in October 2012, Tame Impala, Lonerism, Godspeed You Black Emperor, Alleluia, Don't Bend the Send, Kendrick Lamar, Good Kid, Mad City. It's got like 2 A's in it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I think it stands for something, but I don't know. I only know his next album. Taylor Swift, Red, and Neurosis, Honor Found in Decay. The UK number one single was, for part of the month, Gangnam Style by Psy. And then it was knocked off by Diamonds by Rihanna. The UK number one album was Babel by Mumford & Sons, unfortunately. It was knocked off for a week by The Second Law by Muse, which is a shit Muse album. But at least it's better than fucking Mumford & Sons. But then they got back to number one the week after. And on tour that month, Tenacious D, Motorhead and Father John Misty playing absolutely tiny venues. It was on his first album. So
I'll just say that Gangnam Style stands out. It's like it's still a tune. Like it stands up, I think.
But what was happening in 2012 wasn't really relevant to this CD.
No, it wasn't, because
It's 1982 to 1987,
which is why you bought it, because
yeah, totally,
that's where you live.
On
mentally.
The inside cover of the CD, it actually does have a little bit of what was happening in 1982.
Okay.
And it says...
Written by Phil Alexander, who was previously the editor of Kerrang.
Yeah. Was he?
Yep. Then he moved to Mojo. Still, right. I think he's still at Mojo.
So, 1982, the year marked by UK unemployment topping 3 million, the Falklands War between Britain and Argentina, the sale of over 400,000 council houses under the Right to Buy scheme...
Which was a fucking stupid idea. Sorry.
The
I still
IRA.
Have to deal with that every day at work.
The IRA bombings of Hyde Park and Regent's Park and the privatisation of the British National Oil Company. Meanwhile, in Manchester, May of that year saw two major events, the launch of the Hacienda Club and the meeting of Morrissey and Johnny Marr.
Ah, not at the Hacienda.
No.
I think they played it.
In Morrissey's bedroom, I think.
Yeah, it was. So, shall we start with the CD then?
Yes.
Okay.
I wanted to say a little more about...
Oh, right.
The weird thing
is... Come on as a guest on this podcast and you've fucking
And I'm
going to
take over, yeah.
For fuck's sake.
The thing is, the bands that are on this, if you were being cruel...
Ian?
So there's a reasonable chance that that's going to happen, Tracy.
You would probably say that this is a collection of
twats.
80s indie also runs.
See, I was being cruel. You were just being...
But, I mean, anyone that was listening to John Peel in these years would have known these all. But none of these bands ever became my favourites. But 82 to 87 crosses such a broad period for me because it goes from me being a Durrani. I mean, so this covers me aged 11 to 16, so it's going to be strange.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a Durrani.
Covers me aged born to 5.
But then I was also listening to my elder brother's music, Bauhaus, Soft Cell, Japan. But then around 1984, there was a guy that worked at my family business who I thought was the coolest bloke on earth. And he started lending me records by...
Did you have a crush on him?
Oh, massively. Massively. I was 13. and he was, like, lending me records by Teardrop Explodes, The Cure, The Bunnymen, The Birthday Party.
Excellent choices.
And he also lent me the first Smiths album. Cool. So, and then, of course...
His fault, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, largely.
What was his name?
Malcolm.
It's your fault, Malcolm.
Honestly, Malcolm.
But then also I was listening to John Peel, the Janice Long Evening Session. Cool. So this CD covers those years.
Your, like, musical adolescence.
I think so.
Cool. Right, let's play the first song then.
That then?
That was Felt with Sunlight Bathed the Golden Glow.
They
1984.
Kind of started off sounding like the Pixies. And then there was a bit that definitely, like, do you not think?
Yeah, but
like it sounded like Debaser.
It did, but it predates Debaser.
And then there was that bit that
by some years
massively, massively steals from The Cure as well.
Yep.
And then the fucking vocals were awful.
I quite like it, but it's
Lawrence's vocals are on acquired taste.
It's just all of the production. There was a lot of, like, harmonies and backings, and I just didn't like it.
However,
it was just a bit too...
they were a Birmingham band. Lawrence was
Water Orton,
from Water Orton. Yeah.
I just Warwickshire.
Don't have to like that, even if my family are from Water Orton.
Yeah.
My dad, definitely Water Orton area.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't my favourite song by this band. Primitive Painters in 85 was...
I like this one more than Primitive Painters.
Really?
But only this mix, which is interesting because Ian said he doesn't like all the backing vocals.
Yeah. Primitive Painters, though, had Elizabeth Fraser from the Cocteau Twins on vocals with him.
So the backing vocals are only on this version, which I think was one of the single versions, one of the single releases.
Yeah,
it would be. There are versions on Spotify. There is a version that's absolutely identical,
yeah,
but without the strings and the...
It does sound like they've just gone through and been like, right, what can we do to make this way more radio-friendly?
Exactly.
Like, zhuzh it up a bit.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. It's like Road to Nowhere era Talking Heads covering Just Like Heaven with Joy Division-influenced guitars, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible that I don't like it because I'm unused to the sound of your speakers. Therefore, it's picking up frequencies that get on my tits.
He has something of a cult following. After Felt, he had bands Denim, and his current band is called Go Kart Mozart.
I am surprised that he didn't go for, like, I don't know, linen or cotton.
I do think
merino wool.
And Go Kart Mozart are a crazy band. I saw them live. I saw them at Hare and Hounds last year.
And the reason he went for Denim for the next band was they were more 70s sort of glam rock influenced. So,
which is more Go Kart Mozart are more like that, a bit cabaret.
Yeah,
really.
But he should have gone with a different fabric. I agree with you. He should have formed a metal band called Leather with Metal Study Bits.
Studded leather.
I mean, the bass playing on that track's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, honestly, everything other than the vocals I quite liked.
Yeah.
And it was just the production of the vocals that, like, irked me.
Yeah.
It was a bit too, like, full-on, like, spectre-y wall of sound production of the vocals.
Oh, definitely a spectre influence, absolutely. Should we go for the next one?
Yes.
Yeah.
like I've heard that before, like literally thousands of times.
Without even it being
Yeah,
that
just
track.
Every time it's Tracy's pick on We Dig Music, it'll be something that sounds a bit like that.
So that was The Weather Prophets with Almost Prayed from 1986.
You're right, this is entirely my brand of jangle.
Yeah. They're like three layers down in the, you know, you've got your, like, fucking American Music Club or whatever at the start.
Yeah. Then the Pastels.
Then the Pastels, and then this is like...
Yeah.
It's like all of those bands that lurked around that came after Limp Bizkit in nu metal. You're like, you're doing things that I like.
You know what? This might be the first time the Weather Prophets have ever been compared to Limp Bizkit.
Quite possibly.
Trying to think of like fucking 12 Stones or something like that. One of those bands that you've never heard of, and then someone puts it on, and you're like, "Oh, this sounds like I should have heard it."
But no, this band were created by creation darling Pete Astor out of the ashes of his previous band, The Loft.
Ah, and why did he burn his previous band?
Perhaps they sounded like that.
But. The Weather Prophets continued very much in the same vein to begin with, just that really, really lovely jangle.
It's just really fucking generic for me.
I'm not sure I'd have classified it as a lovely jangle. It's definitely a jangle, but...
Like. There are lovelier jangles on this CD later on.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I wasn't much of a fan of The Weather Prophets. I do recall my friend Octavia was a massive fan.
That's what my car is called.
She tried so hard to get them to give her a free car. They weren't having it.
You should do that, Skoda. Give Octavia a free car.
They weren't having it.
Wow.
It might happen now.
But on balance, I prefer the Loft.
Only if we call them Skoda.
Though. Skoda.
There we go.
No, I preferred his earlier band, The Loft, to The Weather Prophets, I've got to say.
Okay. It's very sort of Velvet Underground influence with like one note piano just going doo, doo, doo,
yeah
doo,
yeah
doo. But other than that, next track.
Yeah.
Well, I walked into town with my hands by my side. Nothing hurts anymore, not my guilt.
So that was Hurrah!
Exclamation.
With a song called Sweet Sanity from 1986.
That was a little bit more like rock than I was expecting from this CD. It's got some serious, like, I'm not going to say full on Bryan Adams, but definitely in that kind of territory. You know what I mean? Oh, it got a bit of a swagger at the start, and it's like, oh, you've had sex.
I really like that track.
Do you know, this is the one band on this whole of the CD that I don't recall at all. Don't know a thing about them.
According to the write-up in Mojo, they were sort of tipped for greatness but never really did much. This was on their first record on a major label, I believe.
It's got like one hit wonder all over it, hasn't it? You're like, it's such a... Yeah, it's got that kind of atmosphere. And
now... I told Keith from Twitter that I was guesting on your podcast with this CD, and he went, "Oh, hurrah, Sweet Sanity, I love that one. Go play that right now."
I usually disagree with Keith on Twitter as well, don't I?
Yeah.
So welcome, Keith, to a new era.
Yeah.
It's probably only going to last as long as this particular discussion, but you never know. You never know, Keith.
But this is my least favourite on the CD.
I knew that. I have in my notes here.
I bet Tracy hates this one because it sounds like a bunch of musicians that know what they're doing.
I expect Tracy hates it as it's very The Big Music, a.k.a. Simple Fucking Minds, U2, etc.
Definitely got a bit of a Simple Minds vibe.
It has, and there's even a bit...
Simple Fucking Minds.
There's even a bit of Wang Chung in there.
Oh, God, yes!
Everybody Wang Chung tonight. I really like that, the 80s chorus guitar sound.
I'm
really digging at the moment.
I really like that. I was into that,
and it even sounds, you could actually turn on it. It sounds very, very of its time in 80s, but you could probably turn on the radio now and hear someone like Blossoms. They're totally influenced by that sound. You know, there's definitely that kind of thing resurfacing at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, I knew. If I knew what Blossom sounded like, I'd probably
they
agree.
They pretty much sound like that, but mixed with a bit of suede.
So the next
actually doesn't
track,
sound like the worst idea in the world.
No.
The next track on the CD is actually a band I fucking loved in the 80s.
We'll skip this
so,
one.
So no, I'll be interested to see what Ian thinks of these, because this is a band I was very into.
Yeah. Okay, let's go for the next track. So this is The Wooden Tops with Well, Well, Well from 1985.
You know what this reminds me of? Like, pacing-wise. You know that song The Same Jeans by The View?
Okay, what? Right.
It's the same kind of really fucking urgent for no good reason pacing. Like, it's really like, I've got something interesting to say, and you're like, oh, just calm the fuck down. I don't care that you've had the same jeans on for 3 weeks now.
The Wooden Tops had this kind of energy that went through all of their songs like that. The singer Rollo was this kind of really strange, wiry character.
Was it King Rollo?
No.
I don't understand what it was. Like, it sounded a bit folky to start off with, like the pacing and stuff, and then it got all like 80s and. I was just very confused by the hybridised bastard.
Well, there's
that
definitely
happened.
A bit of a Suicide influence in there with the electronics and the drum machines and stuff.
Yeah.
I can see what they're going for. Don't massively dig it. So, Tracy, you love this band. Go on.
I mean,
ahead.
they're very mid-80s John Peel session material. That's how I would have first heard the Mac John Peel session. Their first album, Giant, was brilliant. I think they had a stand-up drummer when they played live, actually. I never saw them live,
well,
sadly. But
I think, I'm not 100% sure, fairly certain that the kick drum was programmed because it was just relentless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I think that the snare, I think it was an electronic snare, but I think it was played live.
I'm sure
they
used to have a stand-up drummer doing that. And, no, I love that urgency that you think they have for no good reason.
There was no good reason. There was no good reason. It wasn't urgent.
But what was
it about, Tracy? What was that song about?
Oh, God.
Three
knows.
Wells.
God knows.
Also that well, well, well thing. Yeah. What was that song, Creeping Up the Backstairs? I fucking hated that. It reminded me lyrically of
the Fratellis.
Well. Yeah. Like,
so we've compared them to the View and the Fratellis.
It didn't occur to me until that listen through. I've been listening to the CD for the last few weeks, and it's only just occurred to me that it reminds me of Wading Through a Ventilator by the Soft Boys.
Okay.
And I've just had to look it up while we were listening to see which predated. The Soft Boys track was released the same year, but was recorded in 1977. So I don't know if may have been an earlier release.
I think you'll probably get a lot of Soft Boys influence through most of this CD, in fact.
Well, you know, Robin Hitchcock and that kind of thing.
A huge influence.
Next track?
Yeah.
So this is Close Lobsters and Nature Thing from 1982.
Okay.
I have in my extensive notes here, more genericness, it's okay, nothing to really dislike.
Yeah, like the start of it reminded me of... I remembered the name of the band the moment it started, but then I can't... you know that song Where I Found My Heaven? It was the title track or something. Gigolo Aunts.
Gigolo Aunts.
Kind of reminded me of that. Obviously, this predates it, but
quite possibly an influence on it because it was sort of jangly indie pop.
Yeah, yeah. And then that chorus guitar came in, and I became like, "Oh, that's more interesting than I thought it was going to be." The vocals were a bit, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a band I actually didn't really listen to until the early 90s. They were one of the bands featured on the infamous NME C86 tape.
Yeah.
Not this single. It's actually Fire Station Towers that was on that.
I don't think any of the tracks on here, because a lot of these bands were on C86,
a few of them were.
But I don't think any of them are the tracks that were on C86, were they?
No. I think Close Lobsters have a kind of sound that became more of a generic indie into the early 90s and is almost a forerunner for some of the more generic Britpop stuff.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
I hear the beginnings of Britpop in this sound.
Early Blur.
Definitely.
There's, like, Leisure. Yeah. Their first album's definitely got that kind of thing. Shall we go for the next track?
Indeed.
The Nightingales with Crafty Fag from 1983.
What a terrible, terrible song title.
Yeah, it is.
Also, that, like, the backing, it was, again, that pointlessly frenetic pace. Like, even the singer didn't agree with the pacing of that verse.
No.
Because it was all like, and he's like, no. I'm just going to sing at half time because you cunts keep playing too fast. I don't like this speed at all.
So it sounds, and this isn't necessarily a criticism, like a folk band having an epileptic fit and falling down the stairs with all their instruments.
Yes, yes.
A lot of the 80s sounded like that, actually.
Yes.
None of the 80s that I was listening to.
A lot of the bands did sound like someone falling down the stairs with a drum kit. I liked that sound. So this is another Birmingham band, actually. And
did you go and see them
the other
month?
I did, Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
This is Stuart Lee's favourite band ever. He's just finished making a documentary about them called King Rocker. I'm not sure if it's just finished and waiting to come out or if it is out now. But
I think he's had some showings at various... I've got a feeling The Electric had a showing with him doing it.
Fantastic. They've got quite a cult following.
They remind me of The Fall a lot.
A little. John Robb has a book called Death to Trad Rock, in which he discusses the...
He's got a very trad rock haircut, though.
Yes.
His rockabilly
50s
hair.
Rock. he discusses the sort of, you know, the 80s underground, if you like, and he calls the Nightingales the Misfits of Misfits.
Wouldn't that be the Misfits?
Yeah. Misfits of them, yeah.
Long before they were around, yes.
I'm not going to say long. I think the Misfits
you're right, actually.
80s, you know?
Early 80s, I think.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
I think you're wrong.
Because when was the first Danzig album? That's about 88, I think. Anyway. They have the accolade of the...
1977.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
They've been around for longer than I have. Not longer than you have.
The Nightingales are the third in the charts of the bands that did the most number of Peel sessions.
Yeah.
The Fall, obviously, at number one, and then Half Man, Half Biscuit at number two.
And then the Nightingales,
John Peel loved them.
Yeah.
A lot of people really do. I'm not particularly one of them, alright.
They definitely sound like those bands that people would either be like, no, or, oh my god, this is the best thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, the singer, Robert Lloyd, he's just one of those wonderfully eccentric characters.
I bet our mate Malice fucking loves it.
wasn't at that gig, though.
I bet he's heard it and likes it, though.
Mm. Yeah, he could have been at another gig, you don't know.
It's probably.
Most likely. Someone more obscure. Should we go for the next track?
Yep.
So this is The Flatmates, I Could Be in Heaven, from 1986.
Ba, 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 ba.
Indeed. I totally did not realise that the singer was female until I looked it up yesterday.
Oh,
what?
because in my head all I could hear was Pete Shelley. Because she sounds like she's so much influenced by the Buzzcocks that I can't hear anything else.
I think Danita Sparks from L7 likes them.
Quite possible.
There's a lot of intonation similarities that I could hear.
I think the Flatmates are a name that I've heard lots of, like...
They were a big John Peel favourite.
I'm fairly certain Kurt Cobain loved them. I think a lot of the sort of... like Sonic Youth and the American indie bands and that kind of thing have mentioned them as influences.
It's strange, they had so much influence and yet they released a few singles, but they split up before they ever recorded a studio album.
It's quite often the case. I mean, loads of the Nuggets bands were like that.
Yeah.
Which is why they were collected together on Nuggets.
Yeah.
There's
been a retrospective album done since.
Yeah.
It's the only one on the CD that actually does have a female singer.
You're right, actually, yeah. That is a fair point.
Which, I don't know, it's a bit unrepresentative,
it
really.
It is, because I mean,
there was loads of...
All the Sarah Records stuff, and, or was that slightly later?
Slightly later.
Okay.
These were from Bristol, though.
Okay.
So I think Sarah Records were based in Bristol,
right. So I always think of bands like Tallulah Gosh and that sort of thing for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Were the Pop Guns that early or were they later on?
It was around that time.
Cool.
Yeah.
Shall we go for the next track?
Yes.
So this is the Go-Betweens with Cattle and Cane from 1983.
I feel like I could legitimately listen to this.
Yes.
I hated the intro because it sounded like the bass player was trying to work out what notes the guitarist was playing.
I think it was more trying to work out the time signature.
Yeah.
Because it's a bar of five, bar of two and a bar of four. Because I was trying to fucking work it out for ages the other day and then looked it up.
Nice. Well, like, once it all kicked in, I really enjoyed that. That was really interesting.
The Go-Betweens are an absolutely legendary band.
I have actually heard of them.
Yeah.
They're Australian, but they were signed to Scottish label Postcard.
Oh.
Right. And that song was written in Nick Cave's London apartment while Nick Cave was passed out on heroin in his bedroom.
Wow.
Grant McLennan was in there and he was like, not much I can do at the moment, I'll just pick up a guitar and write a song.
Sadly, Grant McLennan died in 2006.
Yeah. But they're a band that people that like them absolutely fucking love them, and I need to investigate them further because that's the only track I've ever heard by them, really, and I love it.
Should. They've
really
got some wonderful albums. Something like 16 Lovers Lane is just my favourite album by them.
Okay.
I adore the band. And of course we have the Go-Betweens Next Generation band
the Go-Betweens Voyager.
The Goon Sax, Robert Forster from the Go-Betweens, his son, is
Deep Space Go-Betweens.
Robert Forster's son fronts another Australian band called the Goon Sax that use the same format, two boys on guitar and girl on drums.
I didn't know they were connected, fair enough.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, they're so like them as well.
Okay.
They use a very similar formula, the same sort of sing-speaky bit in the middle.
Yeah.
And
so that song, I was looking up about it, apparently Grant McLennan wrote it for his mother about his childhood. But his mum and dad lived in a cattle station in the Australian outback and couldn't get enough electricity to power a record player, so he had to sing it down the phone to her.
Amazing. I love songs that go for that drop down to a speaking bit in the middle. The first time I heard that was Who Can Say by The Horrors.
Okay.
And that's got the most melodramatic drop down in the world.
I think sometimes it really fucking... Sometimes it reminds me of When a Child is Born by Johnny Mathis.
Well, just listen to the Horrors track, because that's the one where he's like, when I told her I didn't love her anymore, she cried. And when I told her a different girl had caught my eye, she cried. And then I kissed her with a kiss that could only mean goodbye. And I fucking love that. It's so melodramatic.
Brilliant.
First time I heard it, I was like, yes. There it is. Peak melodrama.
Shall we go for the next track?
Yeah. Yes.
With the money from her accident, she bought herself a mobile home, so at least she could get some enjoyment out of being alone. No one could say that she was left up on the shelf.
So this is Billy Bragg with Levi Stubbs' Tears from
1986. Okay.
I like Billy Bragg.
I'm guessing you realised that was Billy Bragg.
I'm really unfamiliar with Billy Bragg, okay, to be honest. Like,
I mean, this one was without a doubt the most beautiful song Billy Bragg ever wrote, I think.
Since Swithin's Day. But close.
This song sends shivers through me.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
I think he's probably one of the greatest lyricists of all time, I reckon.
Yeah, I go with that.
And yeah, he's ace.
Yeah, he's all right.
And a lot of people.
I like your production.
Yeah. Well, it's you know.
Just him and a guitar.
Well, no, no, because there's a few overdubs later on. Which
was like the reverb was really nice. Like the way it was done was.
Well, that's basically his live sound for most of it. It's it just plays a Burns Bison guitar. He tends to play a Telecaster these days, but yeah, he used to play a Burns Bison guitar.
Into, is that beautiful green one he used to have?
Yeah, and I think it was into a Roland Cube that he used to play live, but he tends to use Fenders these days.
Yeah, it does sound kind of Fendery.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Famously, he got his sort of big break by he was listening to John Peel on the radio one night. And John Peel said he was really, really hungry and could murder a mushroom biryani. So he turned up at the studio about 10 minutes later with a mushroom biryani and his demo tape. So John Peel was very grateful and played it on the air. And from there...
A friendship.
Yeah.
But they were great friends over the years, in fact.
They were. He's a really nice bloke, Billy Bragg. I've met him a few times.
Yeah.
And he's always really, really good live. Obviously... well known for being incredibly political, but he what tends to get overlooked is he used to write really personal songs about love and stuff like that, like that song.
Yeah,
And they're as powerful, if not more so.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about that one?
No, I'll.
You're just being swooning and
yeah, I've got a tear in my eye.
Let's go for the next one then. Martin Stevenson and the Dainties.
What a shit name.
It was Crocodile Crier from 1984.
You know my favourite bit of that song?
Was it when I stopped it?
When he sings, "Well, it's so good of me for Colin."
Yeah, I noticed that bit, yeah.
I thought he said groovy for Colin first, and I was like, maybe it is, I don't know.
It's not as good as that White Zombie song that goes, Devil Man, Colin.
No.
That's cooler.
That is much cooler.
I never knew why this band weren't bigger, to be honest.
Probably because they were called Martin Stevenson and the Dainties.
Yep. That would be my suggestion also.
No, I mean, they were kind of similar to Prefab Sprout. From the North East as well. But they were another one sort of tipped for commercial, for mainstream success, and never quite achieved it.
They're still going, because I saw an advert for their touring soon.
Do they still have the shit name?
Yes, they do. That's how I noticed it was the same band.
Could have just been Martin Stevenson.
And Martin Stevenson does tour on his own as well.
The slightly less dainties at this point.
The dainties with a double E.
Yeah, which makes it even worse.
That is even worse.
I really, really, really hated his voice at first, but it's grown on me a bit. But the musicianship on there is fucking brilliant.
There's lots of really interesting stuff going on.
It's a lush arrangement.
It's by far the most technically proficient track on
the
CD.
Honestly, they fucked themselves with the name.
Yeah. And that organ solo towards the end is basically prog rock.
Yeah.
His voice reminds me of the Deacon Blue singer.
Ricky something or other.
Yeah.
Deacon Blue, the ones that did the ship called Dignity. I think it was, wasn't it?
Could have been.
Yeah. I bet you do.
There's a King Creosote song from 2016 by Betelgeuse, which I think references the Dainties' first album, Boat to Bolivia. But
it's possible.
Maybe not.
Which that's the opening track to.
Yeah.
Because I had a look.
It is. It's Dignity by Deacon Blue.
Uh-huh.
And yes, the vocalist does sound similar.
Similar.
Which is like familiar and similar.
It's similar to familiar, yeah.
Yes. Similar to familiar. Familiar to similar.
Cimmerillion.
Don't try and fucking get Tolkien into this. He wants nothing to do with it.
I think we should probably just skip it onto the next track now.
Potato.
Television Personalities and How I Learned to Love the Bomb from 1986.
Like loved your mom.
Yes, you should love the bomb like you love your mom. The possibly greatest lyric in the world on this CD.
What I realise as we listen to this is that, like previously, I thought Blur were the first indie band that came out with utter bollocks lyrics.
No, it's a long-standing tradition. It goes back much further than that.
Yeah, so I feel like I'm getting educated by this. But it's like that education that you don't really want, you know?
So the TVPs were a shambling post-punk vehicle for the brilliant Dan Tracy.
Tracy Bingo for anybody playing along at home.
He's been ill for some time. He had surgery to remove a blood clot on the brain in 2011.
There was a benefit gig
for him last year. I don't know how he is now.
No, I've not heard.
I don't know if he's recovered.
Really, really influential.
Massively.
Dan Treacy. Is it Treacy?
I've always pronounced it Treacy, but...
Treacy.
But don't quote me.
Treacy.
Treacy Bingo.
Treacy Bingo. MGMT had a song called Song for Dan Treacy, or Treacy, or however you pronounce it. that wasn't like the subtitle, it wasn't that in parentheses.
Yeah.
Or however you pronounce it. But yeah, they're cited as an influence by loads of sort of indie bands. I know Ultrasound would definitely mention them.
I think. Yeah. My favourite song by them is actually one called I Know Where Syd Barrett Lives.
Oh, I know that one. Is that on the Rough Trade Indie Pop compilation?
Yeah,
yes,
so.
That's where I know that from.
It's on the... Is it on the Where's Bill Grundy Now EP?
Might be, don't know. But that was their... Was that their debut EP?
Yeah.
But that... This particular song is about... Because it was obviously written in the height of the Cold War... was about him going to Greenland Common, where there was an army base, and stealing a Polaris missile and keeping it in his bathroom, which sounds like an excellent idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. Shall we go for the next track?
Yes.
Open your heart.
As in, there she goes.
Yes.
The Lars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was earlier than that.
They got better, didn't they?
They did. This
like
was
a lot.
Well, this was 1986. This is a four-track home demo, which you can definitely tell.
It's one of the lost tracks. It wasn't a single. It
they should have
on their album.
Kept it lost in the cupboard.
It's got some quite nice bass playing on it. There's some nice bass melodies in there, but other than that.
Yeah, but it's so refreshing to hear a song by the Lars that isn't There She Fucking Goes.
Timeless Melody's pretty good.
I love the Lars. It's just There She Goes. It's played to death.
The thing is, I would agree with you if this was a good Lars song, but it's not.
Yeah.
I quite like it.
You'd like songs that sound shit.
It has a naive charm about it.
You fucking naive charm.
Basically, sit down, Lars.
Yes. This podcast is all about the niche references. We should have a niche reference bingo as well. I'm going to get two little buzzers. One's for Tracy Bingo and the other one's for niche reference.
Next track?
Yeah.
So this is the Blue Aeroplanes and Action Painting from 1985.
Which was the most action-y thing about it.
It's got lyrics about trees catching fire, that's pretty action-y.
I suppose.
shambolic as fuck. I've put it, I bet Tracy loves it.
They were an unusual band, actually.
Honestly don't sound unusual. Tell me why they're unusual, Tracy.
The frontman, Gerard, he was more of a poet than a singer. And they had this crazy onstage dancer, Wojtek, I think his name was.
Was it Wojtek from Symposium when he was about three?
But they had this guy that just used to dance on stage with them before the Happy Mondays did it. Although I think Howard Jones did it before them with Jed.
If only he could. Is that not Howard Jones?
I don't know. I was getting confused anyway. You're going to look it up now, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
It's grown on me after a few listens, definitely.
I saw them live a couple of times supporting the Darling Buds in about 89. They were brilliant. They're a very dynamic and interesting band, I always thought.
They are Sydney Youngblood.
They own the Fleece in Bristol.
Do they? Venue. I know they're a Bristol band.
Yeah.
And very much influential on the Bristol scene.
Yeah, well, that's probably...
I didn't know you owned the Fleece.
According to Wikipedia, anyway.
Wiki knows.
And Gerard used to wear really brilliant shirts.
Okay. Really what lurid, was brilliant about them, Tracy?
Just really luridly, psychedelically patterned shirts.
Excellent.
Sounds awful.
The 80s.
There were so many good things that happened in the 80s, you can't use that as an excuse. Depeche Mode. They didn't have stupid fucking dancers.
Their first really good album was 1990.
All right, then.
Next track. So this is The Dentists.
Okay.
And Strawberries Are Growing in My Garden.
They're like,
and it's wintertime.
Shit, the band names. Also, not just from the 90s and early 2000s.
Well, if they were real dentists and it was these days, they'd be playing blues.
Yes, 100%. It was a bit 60s, wasn't it?
It was a little. I don't know if they were ever under the umbrella of the Paisley Underground, but they definitely sound like they could have been. There were a lot of bands in the 80s that were bringing back that kind of 1967
sort of sound. I always thought that was like more of a 90s thing, but I am an uneducated oaf as far as India is concerned.
So there's a box set called Children of Nuggets, which is over there, which has got some really good stuff on it, but it all sounds like that. Stuff like Dukes of Stratosphere, which was an XTC side project.
Right.
And the Smithereens and the Bangles were an early one. Their early stuff was very sort of psychedelic 60s.
Before they started walking like Egyptians.
Indeed. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've got written for that, is it could be on Children of Nuggets.
Yeah, I mean, I love that 60s sort of jangly sound.
It's kind of like you love the Hollies and stuff like that, and yeah, it kind of fits in with that kind of vibe, doesn't
it? Very much so. That the beautiful harmonies and...
It sounds like the Turtles or something like that.
And that was their debut single. I love that song.
Cool. Anything else to say? Or should we go on for the final song of the CD?
Let us final song it.
Indeed.
Completely and utterly, I am bored of the situation here. Somebody told me.
So this is The Chesterfields and Completely and Utterly from 1986.
The Chesterfields?
Yeah.
They've named the songs after sofas. Fuck's sake.
I really like that one.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't remind me of Soft Furnishings.
No.
I love this song. Strangely, I didn't know it until the early 90s when a friend put it on a mixtape for me. They're playing Hare and Hounds.
They are.
In 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, well... when this goes out, it was last week. Yeah. Are you going?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. I may do, actually, because I really like that track. It's got some really nice... The intro guitar is really sort of African-influenced. I mean, Johnny Marr was doing that kind of thing at the same sort of time.
Yeah.
Like, influenced by people like the Bundu Boys you know, African High Life, that kind of thing.
I think this is a brilliant end to this CD.
Yeah.
And the last line of this song that it goes out on, I adore the line, they've got electric guitars in their heart. And
yeah,
I just think it sums.
It's cool. It's a nice sort of energetic indie pop finish. It'd be a good final song at a gig. I don't know, is it their most well-known song? I'd not heard of them at all until we started doing this. Then I saw that they were touring.
It's always been the one I've known.
Right.
There's the best, so...
Cool, I might just sort of turn up at the end if I do.
Turn up for completely.
Are there other songs as good?
They're very similar.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Jangly upbeats.
It definitely fits the Jangle remit.
Yeah.
Yep.
I believe Jangle Pop Pub Twitter will probably...
I mean, we're going towards the Sarah Records sort of indie jangle now. They weren't on Sarah. I always feel like they would have been a good fit. And they're from that sort of area. They're from Somerset. One of the members of the Chesterfields at one point did actually leave to join the Blue Aeroplanes, you know, so...
Well, it's just down the road then, isn't it? Because they're from Bristol.
Well, exactly, and so there's all that... that incestual musician scene going on around there.
Incestual?
From the south?
That is not where I was going. But yeah, I think the Chesterfields takes us into the sort of indie that came after the sort of like 87, 88.
The
much
next
more,
wave.
Yeah, into the really sort of twee, jangly stuff that I really loved.
Ah, cool. So, that's pretty much it for that CD.
Yeah.
Tracy, is there anything that you want to plug?
Anything I would like to plug? Well, I also do this other podcast.
Oh, right.
Yeah, what's that called?
It's called We Dig Music. You might have heard of it. We might be recording the next two episodes of it since
we've
finished
this one.
I've
never heard
of
it.
No. Listen to that.
But no, there's nothing else I want to plug about me, no.
Fair enough. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.